Welcome to the latest episode of the Aussie Villains podcast. It's Paul, Spud and Ryan today. We'll be looking as the signings kind of trickle through at the moment. People getting a little bit restless, but I'm sure our guys know what's going on. We'll be answering your questions from Twitter and from Facebook as well. This is the Aussie Villains podcast. You can get us on Twitter at Aussie Villains, capital A, capital B. Australian fans of Villa on Facebook and our Facebook group. So if you see the group, send an invite through and we'll grab you in as well. This is the Aussie Villains podcast.
On the Handsworth-Aston border, I had a choice. I could go one way to West Brom or the other way to the Villa. But the sound that I could hear loudest in my ears was the sound of claret and blue. They all hated us round here. West Brom, Wolves, and of course, Birmingham. We used to play football on these streets, and I can remember lots of little West Brom supporters coming and challenging us to a game. But we would always win, because we had skills. Competition, tribalism, call it what you like, but hate? No, too strong a word. Just friendly rivalry. Nowadays, it's not about fist fights, it's about bragging rights. Where else can you find a whole community that comes out and sings in one voice, "Is this the way to Hammer Villa?" No, it's not. Yeah, whatever. Get your lungs working and sing for your club. Yes, times have changed. We know the score, but form is temporary, boys and girls. But class, that is permanent. And you know what? Hey, we have class. But today, there can only be one winner. A semi-final? Well, it's been a long time. West Bromwich Albion or the wonderful, the magnificent Aston Villa?
Welcome to another Aussie Villains podcast. We've got Rhino, Paul and Spud. How are we, boys?
Very well, thanks, mate.
Yeah, good. Enjoying a rare day off work, mate. So, yeah.
It's one of those.
With the family.
Mate, family comes number one, and that's why Tess is missing today, guys. So, family duties, last day of school holidays in Queensland. So, there we go. Guys, we posed a couple, well, before we get into listeners' questions, I thought we might start with a couple polls we've done, talk a little bit about transfer, non-transfer stuff that's happening, and then go into listeners' questions, if you're happy with that format.
Yeah, sounds good.
Well, let's do it. And guys, we thank you very much. For those who are new listening, if you want to answer questions, we have Australian Fans of Villa Facebook group. We have Aussie Villains on Twitter, and we'll always every week ask for questions. It's where we get some of our best content, so please don't hesitate. And just to plug us as well, we do this through the Love Sport podcast network. Very easy to find on Apple, Anchor, Google, and Spotify. If you just put in the Love Sport podcast, you'll see the Villa one dominates. So we'd really appreciate that as well. We'll just get into a couple of polls, as we said. Now, really interesting to see where people's minds are. But one of the questions that we put up this week, if Villa, and I'll ask you guys this, if Villa were offered 30 million euros a year to rename Villa Park by a sponsor, would you be opposed to the change? Because it's always going to be Villa Park. I mean, regardless.
Yeah. I would love to keep the name Villa Park, but we know finances in football now are getting more and more complex, and I think naming rights will be on the agenda for us eventually. I would probably take it if that meant that we continue to be successful on the field. And for me, as long as we stay at that ground, it'll always be Villa Park for me, and that's one thing that I'd love to do is stay there. Because it is in Aston, so it is our, you know, spiritual home. But if the offer came up, I'd probably take it at the moment. Yeah.
What about you, Spud?
Look, traditionally, I'd love to keep it as Villa Park. But look, football isn't what I grew up loving anyway. It's totally different to the sport I fell in love with originally. Like, so I think to stick with FFP, I think it's inevitable it's going to happen eventually, whether the fans kick up or not. And that's just how you have to keep
play ball with the big boys, you know. It's sad, but I think you could find a compromise, maybe, like, say, just for argument's sake, like the Emirates Villa Park or whatever, you know. I still think you could keep Villa Park in the name by using a sponsor, right? I don't love it, but there's a lot I don't love about modern football as it is, so I'm also a realist like that. These things have to happen to keep up with financial fair play. So, do I love it? No. Do I have a problem with it? Not really. If it has to happen, it has to happen, and that's just the reality of modern football, I think. The old tradition of the vast majority of traditions are gone from when I grew up following football anyway, so it's just another change, you know.
I reckon there'd be a sponsor out there that would go down this way, and I'm not sure why more clubs don't at least bandy it, and I'm sure they do. So something like Villa Park by Ra, Villa Park by, you know what I mean? Like Villa Park by Visa. Do you get what I mean? Like, I think you could combine the two and be really innovative.
I always think that as well. And I was reading up about like a similar type article before, and they were saying the main problem, you see, like the main reason that the companies pay the big money that they do is because they want their names to be called out on Sky Sports and all that. And if you're denamed by Villa Park and keep Villa Park in the name, it's still always going to be called out as Villa Park on Sky Sports, like, because it's too long to say the name. So they reckon that's why a lot of the reason that clubs don't do it is because the money that's being paid, they just want the sole name, like the Emirates, you know?
Yeah. Well,
that's why I love, there's a lot of ABC in Australia. It's not what it used to be, but so many sports over the years have been on the ABC, whether it's radio, which I listen to a lot of ABC radio for sport. And they do not, because it's a national broadcaster that's not allowed to have sponsorship naming in it, they will call the ground by what it is. So if it's Marvel Stadium, whatever, they'll call it, you know, I suppose what I'm trying to say, if Villa Park was named something different in Australia, we would still call it Villa Park.
I look, as Rhino just said there, it'll always be Villa Park. Anyway, Villa Park, it doesn't really matter. I mean, look, probably matters a bit more to the people that grew up there and have gone there since the 60s or 70s. But I just, as I said, I'm a realist. I understand that that's the way football has gone. Like it or not, it's probably going to happen. So I'm not going to, I'd be a lot more disappointed if we ever moved from Villa Park. But I don't see that, because there is enough room to build around Villa Park. It's not like Stamford Bridge where you're tied in and it's very hard to get development. Like, there is room for development around Villa Park. So I don't ever see that happening, you know.
Yeah, that's my big thing. I just wouldn't want to move from the site. So the naming, yes, I love it being Villa Park and being a traditionalist, but, you know, I'm definitely 100% with Spud there. We've got to move with the times, I guess, haven't we, if we don't want to be left behind. And, you know, 30 million or whatever you've proposed, Paul, is a lot of money every year.
It's a massive way of getting around FFP, it's called the Etihad Stadium for a reason, like, because the Abu Dhabi oil men, they own Etihad Airways too. So
it gets to the point where you start forgetting what a stadium is called. And I'm just going to give an example. So the Gold Coast Suns play at it's now called Heritage Bank Stadium. Before that, it was Metricon. And, you know, all the names start, when they change them after a few years, you don't even know. You hear it on the radio or something. What stadium's that one again?
I did notice though, Paul, I think, from what I've gathered, they seem to do longer contracts for naming rights in England than they do in Australia. I don't think even like the clubs that have changed their name so far, they don't seem to change the name massive regularly like they do over here.
No, you're right. I mean, I think they're usually about 10-year signing deals here, which is not too bad. But look, we'll just go by what the listeners have said here as well, or the people on Twitter. So we had 823 votes, which is a massive amount. Thank you for everyone who's done it. 42% of people, so what's that, about 300, said they would be opposed. 47%, so just over 400, said that they wouldn't be opposed, and 10% weren't sure, which is about 80 odd. But what I found interesting was the fair few comments that came through. So keep the faithful up the Villa wrote, it's so sad when in the US, he's from the US, all our arenas, ballparks, fields turn into insert the cell phone or bank name. They lost all the history and hometown feel. That's a very fair comment. Gemma AVC Lily, Gemma Lily, says it would be selling our soul, but money is taking all the soul out of our beautiful game anyway. So I'd be opposed to it, but can understand why we need to with the way things are in financial fair play. So really considered comments there by Gemma. Dennis White, Irish Villa supporter, writes, Villa Park is our identity. Pub Lunch asked, is that Euros or Australian dollars? Because the Aussie dollar is up the creek at the moment. And I've definitely put Euros. Steve Villain K7R said, it's Villa Park, always will be. GJH up the Villa, Gary up the Villa says, they can sell it, they can call it St. Andrews for $30 million for all he cares.
I don't know about that.
You're a popular one.
I did respond to that one, guys, for us. I said, now that's going a step too far. Elfie Ricketts writes, I generally thought it said if I were offered $30 million a year, then I thought I'd never looked at a yes button so ambitiously in my life. So as an individual supporter, he would take $30 million for himself. I love the thinking, Elfie. AVCFC Uncut, thank you for your follow recently. Selling your soul for $30 million, it's potentially one player, it's just not worth it. Fair call. I understand where he's coming from, but I think it's more than that with financial fair play because there's other things that come into that $30 million as well. LNABC says, commercially it makes sense, but we have to keep some heritage. Bolton have just renamed their ground, the Tough Sheet Stadium. I don't really want to go down that route. I tell you what, been in a fair few toilets around the world where Tough Sheet was pretty much what I copped in the toilets there. This is a lot of people's feelings here. This is Dan R.S. Villa writes, doesn't matter what the official name of Villa Park is, it will always be called Villa Park by everyone, so it doesn't matter. Pickett, Kenny, K.E. Pickett, beep, it's Villa Park. You can put in your own two words of what he told me there. I like that response. So people are happy to sell our club soul for an average premiership footballer because that's what $30 million would get you. That was from Andy Taplin, Tapo99. So I'd say he's a post. Yawn, Yawny McYawn faces back. No, Dr. Tony wanted to rename it Lotus Villa Park and not the car marquee. And that idea was shut down. I've been saying, and this is John Hayes, John Boy ABC, read a couple more out. It's been saying this for weeks, got criticism, but people are now stepping out of the 80s and into the 21st century. There's a few more there, so go and have a look at those. Certainly some really heated commentary. People love it very much. So some good commentary there, guys.
Yeah, thanks for the response, guys.
Yeah, brilliant.
I can understand why people would be super opposed to it, but I just look at modern football and sure, everything traditionalist has gone out of modern football anyway. So at this point, what does it really matter, you know?
It has. Like, I was thinking about this with a whole heap of sports, and you know I follow sports from all over the world. The connection between players and fans is becoming less and less. Like, there's no signing of shirts after a game or getting selfies, all those things that happened. I'm not saying selfies happen a lot when we're younger, but for a lot of young kids these days, it's almost a shock when a player does interact with them now. And I understand their security concerns and everything, but it's getting sad. As a young kid, you're not having that.
I think the modern young player is way out of touch towards what the older generation footballers were like, because they're so protected and rich from such a young age, you know, like from 15 to 16. Like, if you talk to some of the older generation footballers or listen to their interviews and stuff, and they're talking about how they used to be treated around the ground, or if you turned up in any way of a flash car, the captain of the club would tell you, go back, sell that car and don't return to training until you're back, you know, to put them back in their places. So none of that.
Yeah, and all the young players used to do their sort of, you know, apprenticeship. They'd be cleaning the boots of the seniors, wouldn't they? They'd all have like the one player that they look after for the season. So you might be cleaning, you know, Dwight York's boots for the season or Ian Taylor's boots. And, you know, they put them through, you know, and they weren't earning good money. But, you know, Spud's right. I think these guys go into the academies at such a young age now. And when they sign their professional terms, they're on incredible money for the general population, and they just lose touch, don't they? And you know, it's not their fault. It's just the game, isn't it? The way it is, and you get
they're a product of the environment, like
they're bought into that system, and who, you know, you're not going to turn the money down, are you, if it gets offered to you? And yeah, you just get swallowed up by it. And the other part of that is you see a lot of stories now, and I chuck on BBC Sport on you know, and they always put on their page about players who've, you know, lost a lot through, say, gambling or, you know, mental health issues that, you know, they've gone into the system so young and were not equipped to deal with it and then have fallen at the back end of the game and just life in tatters. So, yeah, I think it's very hard for these young guys these days, to be honest, to be in touch with everyone.
Bobby Robson said it. Bobby Robson said it a few years ago. When Newcastle finished in the top four and had a really bad season the following season and they were down fighting relegation. Might have been the year where Bobby Robson got sacked now, but I'm not 100% sure. But they're interviewing Bobby Robson after the game. And like he's obviously been through a lot of decades, like before he passed away and managed all kinds of players from all different kinds of backgrounds and stuff. You know, he managed all over Europe. And they're asking him about Newcastle. And he was like, look, it's simple as this. How do you motivate 11 young millionaires?
So true.
That's what he said. Like he said it was so different back in the day because you had young players playing for those contracts and you were getting everything out of them. He's like, it just doesn't happen anymore. Like,
who's that player, Spud and Rhino, who's that player who's come through from the very bottom of the leagues with Luton and is now in the Premier League?
Oh, I can't remember his name. He's the first player to ever do it.
Yeah, I can't.
I guarantee he doesn't take it for granted.
No.
And it was the same with Jamie Vardy. He's a recent one who came from the non-leagues, didn't he? Chris Smalling was another one. There's quite a few of these guys who've made their way through. And you can really tell with Vardy, can't you? He's sort of come from the bottom and worked his way there. And he's made the most of it.
His interaction with the fans and everything is first rate.
Well, as I was saying a while back there, like when he scored, remember he broke that record where he scored the 11 games on the run. That was probably the year Leicester won the title. I'm not sure if it was the year before or the year they won the title, but he broke Van Nistelrooy's record of scoring 11 consecutive Premier League games. And he was heavily linked to Arsenal that January. Do you remember?
Yeah.
I remember at the end of that year, he was doing an interview with, I don't know if it was after winning the league or it was the year before, the year after, I can't remember now exactly, but he was after a really good season. And they asked him about the transfer speculation. And he goes, look, I had a lot of offers on the table, but he said, I wanted to stay with Leicester because Leicester wanted me when nobody wanted me. He said, when I was getting turned away from all these other clubs and then they paid £1 million to Fleetwood Town for me. And he was like, why would I walk in with them now? You know, they've given me everything. Like, and it's a rare attitude these days, you know.
Very rare.
In almost every sport you can think of, like you look at the NBA or NFL where players just, you know, they're either traded themselves or they switch so quickly and it's hard to get that loyalty. Guys, before we get into people's questions, we did pose a second question this week. Where will we finish in the table next season? The options were 1st to 5th, 6th to 10th, 11th to 15th and 16th to 20th. 284 votes there, so amazing again, guys. We appreciate that. 70% said we'll finish around about the same mark, 6th to 10th. 27% said 1st to 5th. So optimism at Villa Park to finish top 10 is probably at the highest it's been in decades.
Well, I think top 10 would be minimum requirement at this point, wouldn't it? But I answered on my... I answered that question myself on Twitter, and my answer to that, I voted for, I'd be really happy with 6 to 10 and win the conference.
Like,
you win the conference, you get into that UEFA Cup anyway, like to say, the Europa League, the same as you would if you finish in the top 6. And the first year in Europe, trying to juggle league games and the European competition, I think if you can finish 6th to 10th, somewhere around 7th, 8th again, and get into the Europa League and finish with a trophy, great season if you ask me.
Yeah, I'd take that every day of the week. And I said 6th to 10th, and that's depending on, obviously, how the window goes coming up and the transfers coming in. But, yeah, agree with Spud. If we finished in the Europa Conference, you know, two seasons in a row and could pick up a trophy, that's an amazing turnaround for us.
Yeah, I think I was hoping we had a few more players signed because the US tour is not, or the US tour is not far away, and I think we will get a couple more players because there's plenty of players still want to break. But Ian Orman asks, and we'll get into listeners' question. So, you know, long-time listener of the show, he's been responding really well. Ian Orman 5, he's written to us, how much will you be reading into our performance on the USA tour? How much should you read into our performance in Australia last year? I've heard it often and said that you can't read too much into these games, but our Lord and Saviour Emery does like game time into his troops. I'm not going to read anything into it, guys, other than I just hope no one gets injured. And I don't think we really read tons into that preseason game, other than it was beautiful to beat the championship team Leeds. So I'll hand over to you boys.
Yeah, I think in hindsight, though, obviously seeing Villa last preseason in Australia, and, you know, hindsight's a wonderful thing. We, you know, we saw the warning signs, I guess, with how patchy we were. We sort of played all right against Leeds, but then Man United first half over in Perth was awful, came out in the second half. But you could, I think you could see, looking back now, the warning signs, there wasn't much shape to us, or not much of an identity or a plan. But with Emery, it'll be completely different, obviously. And the tour of the US for me will be interesting to see the formations and the shapes that he comes out with. And, you know, obviously it looks like Pau Torres is imminent, and who sort of fits in where, and whether he does slot Ezri Konsa to right back in some of these games. And looking forward again, a little bit of a glimpse of maybe what we're going to see in the season to come.
Fair call. Spud, over to you.
I don't read massive amounts into the pre-season games, because a lot of the time you've won 11 for the first half, another 11 for the second half, for the tour games that early anyway. But as Reino said, yeah, you could definitely see there was issues with the shape and stuff in the game. And like, I was at the Perth, then the game in Perth, United and Villa, and Ten Hag doubled up on Matty Cash early in the game, and with Marcus Rashford and Bruno Fernandes dropping overhead Bingham, and we just had no answer to it, like, just till later on, till United made a lot of changes, and it was just so obvious what their attack plan was. And I didn't read into it too much at the time because it was pre-season, but as Rhino says, hindsight's a wonderful thing now. And then you look back from the Bournemouth game, and they done a similar thing where they overloaded one wing against us, and Gerrard just didn't seem to have the capability of setting up to break that down. And Crystal Palace game was another one I've talked about before, where they just hammered our fullbacks, like, and there was just no game plan to counteract that. And obviously I didn't read too much into it at the time, but then looking back after, it was definitely a warning sign. Emery is such a meticulous guy, he will certainly use the time of a preseason game more thoroughly, like, to get what he wants. But again, I still expect to see big changes after an hour or whatever, you know. But I think when you start getting into the later games, like the Lazio game and stuff like that, maybe more of the games in the first, like the early part of August, then you're starting to get into your league team, I think. So preseason tour, I'll enjoy watching it in America. I won't read too much into it, but the Lazio game and the Valencia game will be ones I'll definitely keep an eye on, because I think that'll bit more of an idea where we're heading and what we'll be doing and what shape we're going to be playing in the league.
Absolutely. So what we'll do now is we'll answer another question from Twitter. This one's from Ryan. I won't read out all his numbers, but he always asks a lot of good questions. And then we'll get into our Facebook ones. But Ryan's written, just watch European under-21s, watch the whole thing, including the ones not on TV. Although Archer wasn't starting most of the games, he was still mega impressive, especially with JJ playing well as well. Do you think his performance will give Emery more to think about?
Yes and no. I think obviously Archer did well in the under-21 Euros. But I think, you know, everyone sort of knows where he's at the moment, and it's that we're at that point where he needs game time at the top level, and we've spoken about it a lot on this pod. And he did, you know, he was coming on scoring goals, and that's just what he does, though. But it's whether he can do it at the top level. I still think there's a possibility of him going out, depending on who comes in. I still think we'll be in the market for a striker. No info on that, but just what I feel. But no, I think Emery knows about Archer already and knows where his strengths and weaknesses are. It's just whether he can do it at the top.
What about you, this one?
Look, he's very topical at the moment, everywhere, isn't he? Like Cameron Archer, and you can understand why he's so topical, because we always say it, like these natural goal scorers are not readily available. So I think Villa fans are itching for him to be given a chance and for him to succeed. And like, there's going to be a lot of negativity if he is loaned out and sold. But we seen him in that Leeds game, lads. Like, he was very lightweight against the big Leeds defence, wasn't he? Like, he came on for that last 15, 20 minutes. He didn't get a sniff. Now, again, pre-season, like, he obviously knows where the net is, but this belief, like, just because he's done it in the Championship and a couple of England under 21 games, like the Premier League is different. Like, it's just different, you know. I don't know. I think he deserves a chance. But I think pre-season is probably, the American tour is probably more important for him than anyone.
Yeah, that's a really fair call. I've been oscillating on this one because I don't think he's good enough at the moment to lead the line for us. But a couple of people have said things that really got me thinking. We are a thin squad. If we don't make the forward signings that we need, I think we have to have him in the squad as backup. Because we just don't have the depth up forward. And we believe Duran will be loaned out. And if we then loan out Archer and we have no real cause to pull them back, which not a lot of clubs are going to allow someone to come back straight away, are they? They're not going to go, yeah, we'll loan this person. And, oh, yeah, you have any injuries, you can come straight back. Those days are done. So I am a little bit worried at the moment. If we don't have the depth, then he has to be in the squad. And if we do sign a couple of players, then he has to go online. So I agree with both of you, and I think the US tour is massive for him.
And the thing is, too, like, players are just starting to go back for pre-season now, and he's going to be going on a break. It's not a good deal for him either, you know? But he obviously won't need as big a break as the older players do, but he's after coming off half a grueling season in the Championship there as well. But the other thing as well is, like we're all on about, like, Archer, are we going to keep him, you know? Who's to say he wants to know? Like, he may not want to stay. If Emery says to him, you're going to play cup games, he'd be like, well, I can go play the league for somewhere else.
That's a good point as well. Like, but,
you know, like, there is that side of it. Like, I mean, everyone's just assuming that, oh, look, we'll keep him, he's guaranteed to stay. But it's not an easy, like, he's played every game at Preston. He's played every game at Middlesbrough while he's available. Like, he's played first team football. Like, it's hard to take that taste away from that. Like, how's Emery going to just say to him, right, we're going to keep you. Look, you're going to play away in Macedonia on Thursday nights, but you won't play the big games now, the knockouts. You play in the League Cup. Look, the FA Cup, no, you may not play. You know, it's not an easy sell. Like, he's at that point where he knows he's hot property too. Like, you know, he could get himself a nice little move. Like, if Emery can't give him guarantees, I know if I was in his position, I'd be giving it some serious thought. Like, because he's got his own thing to think of too, you know.
Or the other side is he mans up, for lack of a better term, and goes, well, F you guys, I'm going to show you what I'm going to do, and kicks ass.
Well, I hope he does. I hope he does. But I've said in this podcast before, for me, because he's not going to play, he's not going to be our main striker in the Premier League. I don't care how good people try and convince me, he's not going to be. He's just, at the moment, that's not to say he can't be. So I just think if a good offer comes in from, I think if we have someone in the door and a big offer came in from, seriously think about it. I genuinely do.
I think that's the bonus of this under-21 tournament, though, is again, though, if he's, you know, he's obviously played well when he's come on or started and scored goals. And for us, it's a bonus either way that, you know, he's developing, and it either brings, you know, him to the front at Villa, or it attracts attention from other clubs. He's in that window. And I couldn't agree more. I think if Emery goes after a striker and gets someone in that he wants, then I think there'll be a lot of suitors for Cameron Archer and some good money coming in for him, and being a homegrown talent as well, that helps us out with the FFP too.
You know, sorry,
I was just going to say, we've always said on this podcast, if you are good enough, you're old enough. So, you know, it's his time right now. He's got to do something.
He's 21, isn't he?
Yeah.
So, it is that time. And I think you're right, Paul. I think at 21, it's make or break for him now, isn't there? And, you know, like Spud's just touched on, he'll want to go and play games as well, though. He's not going to want to sit on the bench and get 10, 15 minutes here and there. He needs game time and needs constant games, constant, you know, 80, 90 minutes. So, yeah.
If it was me, which obviously it's not, if it was me in charge of this situation, I would genuinely consider loaning him to a Premier League club if there was an offer there for a year. Yeah. Just see how he goes. Proper football, and then there's no there's no question marks then, you know? Like, there's yeah, he's getting the games he deserves. He's happy. He's playing football. He's being developed at the rate he should be. And Villa get to see him properly in a proper level of football. That's just my opinion on it. If he comes and plays 10 games out of a 50-game season, what benefit is it for him, you know?
No. Okay, Spud, over to you, mate. Facebook questions.
Yeah, we've had some very interesting questions from Facebook this week. No, just give me a second. Sorry, Paul. I didn't have it up there.
Nothing to be sorry about.
So, yeah. So, this week we had from Troy Asquith, a regular contributor to the podcast. Thanks again for your question, Paul. And again, it's around Archer. What's your guys' thoughts on Archer? Many think he's done enough in his loan spells with Preston and Middlesbrough to deserve a chance. Considering the homegrown requirements for Europe, surely he has a very high chance of being in the squad. I think we've just kind of
pretty
much answered that, haven't we?
We kind of have covered it, but I think Troy adds that extra element in of the requirements for the Europa Conference.
And it's a very important point.
Yeah, because the amount of games that are going to be coming at us this season is, yeah, especially if you want to be battling on all fronts, the both Cups, League and Europa, you do need depth in the squad, don't you? And we know injuries are going to take their toll. We've already got a couple before we've even started the season. So, yeah, depth is paramount, especially in those key areas.
We appreciate the question, Troy. It's just a shame we've kind of followed on already. So we appreciate it.
Now keep those questions coming, though, Troy. We enjoy your contribution every week, man.
Brilliant. Just
at the moment, Cameron Archer is very topical. We're getting a lot of questions on him. So we're sorry if we're answering it before the question comes. But, yeah.
Absolutely.
The next question then is from a long-time listener, Josh Donachy. Okay, a question from me this week. Expected finish from us next year. I'm going to say we finish top six. I think some transfers will happen next few weeks after Paul Torres is announced up the Villa.
Yeah, and another question that's fantastic. And we had that question throughout the week on our poll. And we've answered that one a little bit earlier on. I suppose what I'll focus on in this question is about the other signings. I'm hoping for another two guys. Before the end of the before the season starts, I'm hoping for at least two more signings.
Can I pin you boys down for a position there? Just where do you think we'll finish? Give us a number.
Yeah. I got seventh.
Same. I've gone seventh as well, Paul.
And you'll hate this. I actually did something that doesn't make any sense at all because you play everyone twice. But I actually went through and went win, draw, loss, win. And I had us down at about seventh.
Mm. What about you, Spud?
I'm going to stick my neck out and say we're going to finish sixth and win the conference.
Nice.
I think if we can get a few points in the board early, sixth or tenth, as I said, I'd be happy with, but I do think we can finish sixth. I do, yeah.
I love it.
Yeah. The next question then is from Mark Smith. We know well all about Mark. He's fantastic.
Yep.
Week in, week out, and never lets us down. Always good questions, too. This is a very important question, too, considering the news that went down during the week. So it says, the injury to JJ shows how thin our squad is. An injury to Watkins and we'll be right up Schitt's Creek. One, who replaces JJ? Two, who would you realistically like as a sub for Ollie? Duran, Archer, someone else? Up the Villa. Great question.
Brilliant question.
First of all, someone else? Sub for JJ. I think there were times last year where he wasn't guaranteed a starting spot, was he?
No. I'm wondering where he played most games, did he?
I think in a lot of ways he's more replaceable because of McGinn and players like that that are versatile. Mm-hmm. I think he's more replaceable than Watkins is. So that's just me. I think we can cover with Buendia, I was just about to go through the whole body midfield with Louise and so forth. I think Ramsey's easier to replace than Watkins will be. So I'd say we've got to focus on the support for Watkins.
I think that's a good point, Paul, I think, because I think Yuri Tillemans coming in anyway straight away that allows you kind of jig that midfield if you have to. So
yeah.
What you're going to miss with JJ is his ball-carrying ability.
Yes.
We're lacking someone that can contribute that as well as JJ does, because for me, I think one of the big concerns for me with JJ getting injured is the fact that Alex Moreno is also injured.
Yeah.
I was about to say the
majority of our attacks came down the left in the second half of the season. Once Mourinho signed, I mean, I would say I haven't seen the stats in it, but I would imagine if you were to look at the statistical output of attacks from either side, I would be heavily
favored.
I would say,
yeah,
Mourinho and JJ were a huge part of that.
I'll ask one to you guys then about this. It's carrying on from that question. Could Kamara play midfield?
I think Kamara sits deep, and that's where he sits with Luiz for me. And then I think we've got players who can cover JJ a bit further forward in the field. You've seen a lot of Felipe Coutinho in the on Twitter recently with his training. And is he someone who gets a second lease of life after the preseason, possibly? But for me, I like Dougie and Kamara sitting deep, and I think that's their best positions. Covering JJ is going to be difficult. Like you say, there's no one quite like him in our squad, but I do think we can cover him a bit better than Watkins. And for me, I think a striker is a priority this window, fellas. And they're not easy to come by, and getting a top quality striker in, because we know Ollie Watkins fires in patches. So yeah, for me, that's high priority.
So who in the second part of Mark Smith's question is, who would you realistically like as a sub for Ollie, Duran or Archer or someone else?
Someone else. Yeah, I think we have to be looking. I think, you know, Duran and Archer, we spoke about at length, but I do think we need an upgrade. Like, I think Ollie Watkins had a fantastic season, but he works in patches, but we need some top-level competition for him to bring the best out of him as well. Not easy to get, but I just think there's got to be a striker out there. One who sticks out for me is Jonathan David from Lille, who's got an incredible record in Ligue 1, and you know, whether that transfers to the Premier League, you don't know until you give him a chance, but we need some competition or something a little bit different to Ollie. And if we do get an injury, like Mark is saying, then yeah, we're in deep trouble at the moment, because I just don't think we can cover him.
Okay, would Arch? I'm going to ask you both, and it's carrying on from these questions. Would Archer and or Watkins start for Man City, Arsenal, Man United, Newcastle, Liverpool?
No.
So we have to upgrade.
Archer, no. Watkins would never be their starting main striker, I don't think. But I do think someone with Watkins' attributes could find a place in that Newcastle team.
Oh, yes.
Or that Man United team.
That's not what I'm asking, but I hear what you're saying. He would definitely be in their squad.
What you're asking, isn't it? I'm saying Watkins would find a place in their first 11. Not as the main striker, though. I don't think other clubs would play Ollie as our number nine, to be honest, because I don't think his main attributes are. But he can definitely offer more than Anthony Martial, as a ball carrier.
Yeah, yeah, good, no doubt about that. But I suppose I'm thinking more of a striking role.
I don't think he'd be the number nine. But I've said this many times. I've never considered Ollie a number nine. I don't think that's his best position. And that's why I think we're going to be in for a striker. I don't think Emery will either, but of what we had last year, Ollie offers far more. And I wouldn't be surprised if we sign an out-and-out striker and Ollie is the one to complement him and playing behind him.
Yep, agreed. So I suppose that's a really good way of saying, do we need an upgrade when you compare yourself to the teams around us? You know, you even look at the teams just below us, like Tottenham. I mean, you know what I'm trying to say?
And different games. Because he's saying there in his question, Mark Smith saying who's to be the sub for Ollie? Is it someone else? I don't think someone else is to be the sub for Ollie. I think if someone comes in, Ollie's going to have to push out to oust him. And I think we're going to be signing someone to compliment Ollie as opposed to back him up.
And I think it works both ways. If we do sign an out-and-out striker, then could we push Ollie out into JJ's position with that ball-carrying ability? You know, he played out wide for Brentford and has spent a fair bit of time out there. And like you said, I definitely see Watkins having a role at Villa, whether it's the out-and-out striker or moving positions further out wide. I think that's there. I could definitely see him playing a different role for us.
Well, for me, he'd be covering our much maligned Bailey out on that kind of position.
And it's again, I think, as you always say, I know we'll have a better idea once we see the window over. But yeah. I think Emery genuinely does like Ali, and I think that's pretty obvious. Yeah. Like,
and I think there's talks of a contract extension, isn't there? Which would be great. And you know, Ali's still fairly young, and still got a lot to offer Villa. And you know, we do need to improve in a lot of areas, but we also need to keep a core of players there who, serve us well and have done a great job for us.
I think there's another question coming up, I think, from Mark, and it will relate to something I have not stopped thinking about, and that's our keeping situation as well.
Yeah, so it says, you're Dead Right Politan Facebook there as well. So Mark Smith again, brilliant question again. What's the chances? Martinez to Man United and De Gea to Villa?
Yes,
I don't see it for love nor money, to be honest, personally. But
no, I don't either. And you read the me boys. I'm reading the gossip columns left, right, and centre. And Andre Onana looks like he's going to be there. If that's how you pronounce it, sorry, from Inter Milan to Man United. And has obviously played under Ten Hag at Ajax before. Those rumours are really strong at the moment. And I just. Martinez going across to United, and I don't see De Gea coming to us either, to be honest. I
see Martinez at United in a year's time if things go wrong at Villa Park this season. The lure of playing for one of the biggest clubs in the world, if we go backwards, will be huge.
Mm.
Yeah.
I'm talking a season's time. I'm talking.
I understand what you're saying. Yeah, I don't see Martinez. There's no way Martinez leaves this summer. I don't think.
Oh no.
I did this summer now, so I think Onana is nailed on at the moment to sign for United. And De Gea, I don't want to go too far off point, but just while we're talking about him, it's absolutely disgraceful the way they treated that man after 12 years of service.
Yeah. Like I agree.
He is obviously gone downhill, but the offer him a contract, retract it. Then, obviously, what must have happened is that they offered him the contract, and Ten Hag must have got sniffed at Onana was interested to come. Because they offered him a contract at a certain value, then they retracted him and offered him less. Then they let his contract run down whilst he was on holidays, and then he just done his goodbye post last night.
That's the way I read it and heard it. And if that is correct, I'm absolutely disgusted in that. I'd be disgusted as well. I'm not saying it.
Like Spud says, he deserves a lot better than that. After 12 years of service, and, his form has dropped off, but he's been a very good goalkeeper for a long time as well. And Man United haven't been their strongest or their best in recent years. And, he hasn't had much in front of him either, in fairness. So, yeah, that's pretty bad on there.
They've had Harry Maguire there helping him out. Come on.
The move could be good for him too. He's kind of a bit stale at United. He's still relatively young too. Like, he's been there 12 years. But I don't know. It's weird how they handled that whole thing. He should have been left, go on his free with dignity if they had no interest in giving him a contract, or they were, it just seems like, I know we only get media reports too, so we don't know the ins and outs, but there just seems to be a couple of dirty tactics gone to get him out the door at the end, Anyway, that's their problem. It's great to see them football. In trouble.
That's football at the moment. So, I know it's not the complete question, but I still worry about our goalkeeping ranks as well.
Yes, definitely. And I think, we've spoken about at length is the sub-goalkeeper, isn't he? And Robin Olsen, and whether there'll be movement. Do you boys think we'll be in for a sub-keeper?
Yep. 100%. I reckon we already are.
Yep. Spud?
I'd be very surprised if we're not, but it's the one thing that there's no real rumours about. Look, the only way I don't see them replacing him is if he has a lot of faith in Sinisalo. But that's the case, because he did put him on the bench a lot last season. That is a very good point. There must be some reason that he put him on the bench that much towards the end of last season, where he was playing two goalkeepers. Is he getting him used to the match day experience? Who knows? But it was weird that there was two goalkeepers on the bench all the time. It's strange. And Emery's not a strange guy. Like, everything he does for a reason. That says to me, is he preparing for him to become number two,
Yeah, and I think, did you bring up on the last pod, Spud? I think it was Tom Heaton. Someone sort of raised the point of maybe bringing him back. Might have been in our private chats and stuff on WhatsApp. And
I said it on the pod last week.
It was, yeah, sorry. Yeah, brilliant call. And I
thought he brought it up on the Love of Pomegranate podcast.
That's right, yeah.
So I thought it was a really good idea, like. Third choice at United, you know?
Yeah, I like that, guys.
Yeah, I think we are. And I think with Olsen, I think he had recently played for Sweden, had a decent game. But for me, it's not going to work. Like,
sorry, guys. I'm 50 years of age. I've got a busted up knee, and I reckon I'm quicker than him.
I agree. But yeah, it is one that we don't see many links to. But yeah, maybe it is Sinisalo. Maybe it's his chance to come in as a number two and get some games in the cup or wherever we can. And yeah, we'll see what happens.
Every time you guys say number two, I keep thinking Austin Powers.
the thing we missed too as well, like it shouldn't. Rob Nolton could move somewhere and have a very good end to his career, because, like, particularly with goalkeepers, like, confidence is such a big thing, you know.
Yeah.
And like he obviously knows he has the backing of the Swedish coach. Like, he very rarely lets Sweden down. Like, he's won their player of the year. Good.
The thing is, though, Spud. We play our keeper as a sweeper and it suits Emery's style. Whereas someone like Olsen, I agree with you. He could be great in another club where he needs to be a shot stopper. Yeah. But if he's someone who needs to distribute the ball quickly and sweep, he's got no chance.
And also, like I don't care how much money the man's on. Like, it must be really hard to walk onto a pitch knowing there's 40,000 people in that stadium wishing you weren't there.
Yeah, it is.
Like, I don't care. I don't care how, like, people say, oh, yeah, but they're worth millions. I don't care how much they're worth. You're not thinking about your bank account when you have to walk out and face people that don't want you playing. And he has the confidence of Sweden. That's why he never leaves him down. He must bounce onto the pitch for Sweden, like, you know.
Yeah.
So I think a move for him would be better. Like, there's no point. Like, I hate to say it, like, but he's not wanted at Villa, and that's horrible for him. Like, why would he want to stay around a club that he's not? Unless he wants to prove a point, you know.
But, yeah.
He won't be there. You only have to go and watch some of his mistakes, and people are never going to let those ones down. And you're right, it's really hard for him.
Even if he, let's say he did go on a run of three or four really good games, as soon as he makes one mistake, they're just going to jump all over him again. And every keeper is going to make a mistake, you know, at some point. So, I think for him moving, Sinisalo could be the one to step up. I'll be honest, Sinisalo is someone I've obviously seen him in the Villa squads and the underages for a long time, but I actually don't know much about him. I couldn't tell you how good he is or what his strong attributes are. And if I started talking about it, I'd be telling a lie. So I'd be interested to see a bit about him, you know?
Yeah.
I'll tell you what, guys, I want to go back just a moment. I was looking through all the players' kind of photos and who we've got in the squad and all those things, and just got this funny feeling. I think you guys might be right. Coutinho has just one final good season. If he just gets semi-fit, there's no way that Emery won't be able to use him. If he's fit. It's like another signing.
Yeah, and I think the amount of games for us this season, all going well with the Europa Conference and the Cups and stuff, if we start going deep into some of these competitions, there's room for, players like Philippe Coutinho, because at the end of the day, you need numbers, and players get injured, suspended, and I think a player like him, he hasn't played, a lot of football for us towards the back end of the season, but he did well against Arsenal at home and got injured, and then that was sort of the end for him. But he was showing some signs again, under Emery, and I definitely think there's a role for him there. And looking at, as you said earlier on Twitter, looking at his training footage through the summer, he's eager, it looks like he's getting through a lot of work, and he's either gearing up for a big season or a big move.
I thought he looked like he'd lost a couple of Ks as well.
Yeah, he's looking strong.
He kind of, like, the fact that he's back training so early, like, I wonder, has Emery said to him, show me your fit, prove your fitness and I'll keep in the team, And for him as well, like, he doesn't want to leave the Premier League with a season like that, No. He had such a good reputation. And I think as well, he burdened the shouldered a lot of the blame for what happened with Gerrard as well, which was very unfair, because like he got tarnished a lot with Gerrard as well, because he was Gerrard's main signing. So he might get to play with a bit of freedom this year as well. But with Coutinho, I always felt it's his injuries. Like, that's the problem. Like, if Emery's a smart man, like, he knows if I can get 30, 40% more out of him, even 25, 30, you know, to replace a player of that ability is not cheap. So well, if he's going to see the value in him, like, but I think also if a big offer came in from the ticket.
Yeah,
it's either one of two things, and you absolutely have it. He's either getting super fit to go over to Saudi Arabia,
yeah,
and we get a fair bit of chunk of money back for him, or he's like, no, I really want to play under Emery, and he's got himself super fit. Either way, it's going to be good for us, I think.
Yeah, it's a win, isn't it?
I'd love to see him stay, if I'm honest. I'd love to see him have one season, like, injury-free, because it's so hard to judge a player when they're picking up injuries. If he went away and he stayed fit for the whole season and he got nothing, I'd say, yeah, let him
go. Yeah, I'm the same as you, Spud. And, you know, last pre-season when we were all, you know, up at Brisbane and stuff, you know, everyone's just singing his name and just, you know, I was really excited when we signed him and I just wanted to work out. I want him to have a good season this season. I'd love to see him stick around and just get some minutes and really show what he can do.
I was just going through the pictures trying to get a bit of a vibe of the season, and I just think, do you know what I mean? Like, I think if we could just get a slight bit out of him, he's almost like another signing.
100%.
He's obviously showing something, though, because as soon as he got fit, Emery put him straight in for that Arsenal game. That was a big game, like. And Emery obviously has respect for him. He can do things other players can't. Like, we just haven't managed to find a way to get it out of him yet, you know. If he stays, he stays. But I do think if a big offer came in, they would take it. But I just don't know, are the big offers going to come, you know?
Nah, spot on. That's why I think the only big offer may come from Saudi.
We have one question as well from the Forever Villains Facebook page from Sir Barry White, who's becoming a regular contributor. So we appreciate this, Barry.
Yep.
So we're saying, we're constantly being linked with more central defenders and midfielders, more than wingers and forwards. Do you see a three at the back scenario, or maybe Pau Torres being played as a central defensive midfielder? We're not being linked with a right back. Is Ezri Konsa the backup, given that Unai likes an attacking left back and a more rigid right back? Also, not being linked with a backup goalie who would undoubtedly play a fair few games if we qualify for the group stage of the UEFA Conference League. It's fair to say there's not a lot of confidence in Olsen. How does Emi Martinez feel as he looks forward to Europe, but probably won't be playing in it maybe until we reach the quarterfinals? Maybe there's things happening on the back burner, like the Ings transfer, push straight in with no previous publicity. Those are the actual type I like, so we don't give anyone else a chance to put us in a bidding war. Which realistic player would you like to see signing for us in this fashion? So he's basically saying, who would you like to just be announced tomorrow that the media haven't picked up on, basically?
Yeah, I'll start with that one, and I mentioned him a bit earlier. It's Jonathan David from Lille. I just think if you're going to take a punt on a striker from a different league, someone who's got a really good scoring record, year in, year out, gets a lot of goals, and I think he would suit the Premier League from what I've seen of him. That would be the player I would love to see announced Ings style, just no fanfare, just, you know, get him in, and yeah, that would be my one.
I was going to say Harvey Barnes, but he's almost certainly going to Newcastle now.
Yeah, it's funny, isn't it? Because, yeah, but there's a lot of media speculation around that. Anyway, Paul, I think he's saying, like, who's someone that's just announced tomorrow?
Yeah.
Like, without the speculation. Like Ings, you know, no one knew Ings was coming, and it just suddenly Ings is holding a Villa jersey, you know?
And we have kind of done this over the past few weeks. So my perfect player would be someone I've never even heard of and comes in, and I'm just shocked when he plays. You know, like someone from Italy or Spain or Portugal, and I just have no idea who the guy is. I can look up his highlights, kind of like when we got Leon Bailey from Germany. I hadn't heard of him before I watched his highlights. So someone like that, I can't give you a name because otherwise it would have been someone that they'd already speculated on. But that would be amazing if we got in someone, and it's like a Bailey. I'm not saying Bailey, but you know, like a Bailey that his highlights are amazing, and then he plays the first few games, and we just go, whoa. Let's sign some more players from Germany because, you know, I'm after a German player. So, yeah, I won't give a name, but I think that will be someone you haven't really watched and he's from another, you know, country, and we just go, whoa, okay, yes, he was good.
Yeah, that would be class, yeah. And I think that's probably what is going to happen, Paul, to be honest. If someone's going to be announced, it's probably going to be someone we didn't expect, you know?
Yeah, and I think I think that's what Barry White was saying in that question is probably we haven't been linked to a lot of people, but we do tend to do our business really quietly lately. And, you know, the last few windows, there's players who just sort of come through sort of with no media speculation and get announced, and they're very secretive. And, you know, it's good for us, you know, you sort of...
That's what the best clubs do, guys.
Yeah, and I think there will be some surprise players coming through. I think there's players that'll come in that we don't really know, like Alex Moreno from Real Betis, that, you know, unless you watch La Liga a lot.
That's where I'm coming from, guys. It'll be that kind of player that if you'd heard of him previously, you're in the 1 or 2%.
Yeah, and I think it'll be, you know, very stats-driven and very... Because, you know, Alex Moreno's stats in La Liga, he was one of the better, you know, probably the best left-back there on stats, but no one sort of knows his name because he's not playing for one of the fashionable clubs. But I agree, I think there'll be players coming in. I think there will be a right-back that comes in, just to answer one of Barry White's questions. I think Konsa can cover there, but
Not for the whole year, I don't think.
No, I think there will be direct competition for Matty Cash coming in, and I think that'll be great for Matty. I think he had a stop-start season with injuries, but when he did play, was great. But I think there will be someone coming in, and they'll be pushing each other like we are at the moment with, you know, Mourinho and Luca Dean on the left-hand side.
I think that Matty Cash, it's his end product that worries me, and yeah. It's his end product that would very much worry Emery. His effort, you cannot at all fault. His ability with the ball when he's moving fast, you cannot fault. But that end product, that it's one in every five crosses that seem to hit the target.
But that's coachable, Paul. See, like, I think Emery would
I don't say coachable. I do get that. I do get that it's coachable. But should you be coaching someone who's mid to late 20s on how to cross a bloody ball? Do you know what I mean? I just think there's better finishers out there, and I see people are going to think that I'm bagging Cash. I'm just saying.
No, I know. I understand what you're saying. I just, for me, like personally, like I just think that Gerrard was so useless, like at setting up systems and all that. Like Manny Cash never had the chance to get the best out of him. He had to put 20 crosses a game into the box to someone that's not in there. And no, his delivery wasn't great, but like. The games, once he came back after the World Cup from the injury from the World Cup and stuff, and he had a good run of games there. He played really well for ages and then picked up the injury again. He went through a spell there. He was very good, Emery. So,
the best clubs have five or six players absolutely champing into bit, fighting each other for spots. We kind of don't have that at the moment.
With Barry's question there as well, like, you know, like what he was saying about the fanfare, with no fanfare and just announced tomorrow. Yeah. You know who I'd love that to be? Because he's having a lot of trouble with the hierarchy at the moment. I'd love if I woke up in the morning and turned on my phone and Sadio Mane was after signing.
Oh,
don't.
Brilliant player.
No.
He's having fierce trouble with Bayern Munich at the moment.
Can you not do that, mate? Because
it's not going to happen. But can you imagine him in our system?
I was only saying to a Liverpool mate the other, you know, a couple of months ago, saying that like I was glad to see the back of him because he'd always score against Villa. He's got the quickest hat trick in Premier League history against us for Southampton, and just dominated us for years. Terrorized us. And I was, you know, I'd love to see him in a Villa shirt.
I'm surprised that he left Liverpool and Liverpool weren't quite the same. I don't think
there's... Yeah, he just, like, the work rate, the goal scoring, just everything he brings, like, I think he'd be a phenomenal signing. Look, I don't see him coming back to England, to be honest. I think other clubs would be interested in, but...
You're freaking me out, though. You've given me hope, and hope's the biggest killer.
And then to answer his other question about playing Pau Torres as a hole in midfielder, not in a month of Sundays. Never going to happen. It's just not going to happen. We have already got three strong options that we can put in there. Youri Tielemans, Kamara, Luis. You can even put McGinn in there as a patchworker when you need to. I don't see it. Torres has come to play centre back, and he's going to be a vital part of this cog in this team.
We're going to be a tough team to break down. That's quite exciting.
People forget as well, like that Emery played a back three with Arsenal a lot as well, like so. You know, I remember, like, I think it was against Bournemouth in December 2018. It was the first time he played it, and he played for Norwich. Arsenal hadn't played a back three in donkey's years. Like, it was the first time. And then he finished out the season playing with the back three. So it's been done many times by Emery. Yeah, like, well, all the shows will tell you, like the other podcasts and statistics will tell you, and Twitter and stuff will tell you, oh, no, he doesn't play that system. But if you just go back over his history, he's played the back three numerous times. I see this last week about the big game for Sevilla and Villarreal, but he's done it many times for Arsenal in the league as well. So, yeah. So I don't think, I don't think it's going to happen all the time, but Pau Torres is coming to be the centre-back, whether that's in a three or two.
And the back three suits us as well, Spud, in terms of, I keep saying we've got a sweeper-keeper, but we do. So a back three is not unrealistic.
And with JJ getting injured now as well, I think it makes the 5-3-2 even more possible because now you can play a flat three in the middle with Tielemans, Kamara and Luis.
Yes, so, that's a good point. That's a really good point. With JJ going out, a shuffle is definitely on the cards, I would say.
The shape, and then you have the personnel to do it now without hampering things too much, you know. So, yeah, like, I mean, I won't say the away game against Newcastle will tell us a lot because typically your base formation is more evident at home. So you obviously make tweaks to suit the other team and the away team. But I wouldn't be surprised if we win 5-3-2 up in St. James's on the opening day, to be honest. I wouldn't be shocked at all.
No. Well, is there any more questions for this pod? Because if not, we might actually wrap it up on a high there.
Yeah, no, I think not. I think that was the last question. So that was a great question, Barry. Good pair of points.
Brilliant.
Well, if we missed anyone's questions, keep them coming in. We do try and answer. We do try and give you a name and credit for the questions as well. They're probably, to me, they're the most fun part of the pod. And we'll always honour them. So please do. We really love it. Guys, this has been the Aussie Villains podcast. You've been joined by Paul, Ryan and Spud, otherwise known as Mark. And we will be back next week. So keep the questions coming in. I'll see what ridiculous questions I can get up on our Twitter feed. I'll see how many people I can annoy. Boys, any final questions you had? Any statements?
Yeah, I had one, and we sort of just spoke about it off air, myself and Spud. We were just saying, your thoughts on the transfer window so far, fellas?
What we have done, whilst it hasn't been the mass we've wanted, it's been quality.
Yeah.
I think it's been a brilliant start to the window. Like, you've signed two players who are more than capable of starting in the first 11 and are capable of playing ahead of some of the players we already have in our starting 11. So I think you're straight away improving the team, not just the squad, you're improving the team. And yeah, I just think if you had taken Pau Torres and offered me Pau Torres and Yuri Tielemans at the start of this window, you'd bite your hand off for it. Like, it's brilliant.
But you're getting me invited again, mate.
And if that's the quality of player we're looking at, then I think the rest of this window is going to be very exciting too.
I agree too. Yeah, I agree too. Unreal.
How about yourself, Paul? Any questions for us?
No, I was going to actually, I'll tell you what, our listeners have actually, probably three questions I had for you guys. The listeners had already asked it. So it's the quality, questions from everyone. One thing I will say, just one I'll put out there and we'll put it up on the Twitter feed. If you could get one trading card signed by any current Villa player, which player would it be?
Like trading cards and the cards that you collect, those type of trading cards, huh?
So the paninis and everything like that. So it's it's an on-card signature from one of the current Villa players, and it would be a one-on-one just for you. Who would it be?
Emilio Martinez. You'd have to have a World Cup winner.
Yeah, that's it's hard to argue with that. With what he's won. I'll go Tyrone Mings just because of, you know, where he's been and where he's come from and what he's done at the Villa, and he just continues to just push forward with us. So I think he'd be someone that I'd love to get a card signed and just, yeah, we'll keep that one.
So I can't answer that one probably myself because I've already got McGinn, Coutinho, Mings. So I've got those. But I think Martinez as well because I haven't got him. And yes, a World Cup winning keeper for Villa. Yeah, that's the one.
What about you, Spud? Any questions?
No, not really. There was something I did. I was having a conversation with someone recently there about Villa and about Emery and stuff. And like we were saying, do you think like, no, obviously Emery's got a lot of power in there now. And, you know, like every block is in place. Like if he was to walk away, do you think the whole thing would fall like a house of cards?
That's the one thing that worries me with the way we're setting up at the moment is that we're... And I think any manager worth their salt needs the team around them that they want and the structure around them that they want. And to get someone like Emery, that structure would have been pre-agreed. But that's the one thing. If he walks away, I think it could crumble a bit and could set us back. That's my one sort of worry, I guess, going into what we've got. But obviously Emery's, you know, hopefully here for a while, and you know, I see him being successful as a Villa manager, but we are putting, for a better term, all the eggs in one basket. But I think, like I said, any manager worth their salt would want that structure or demand that, because that's how they, you know, that's how they get the best results. So, yeah, it is a worry, but I see him staying around for a bit.
I think any time you're going after a manager who has a complete idea of what he wants, sorry, I'm just shutting a window, apologies, podcast listeners. I think if you're going after a manager like that, he's going to be long-term. I can't imagine him wanting to bounce around for a while. I think he sees Villa as a you know, medium to long-term gig, the way he's setting it up. And I think the club accepts that that's going to be the case. So I don't have that fear. I think if he jumps around, you become like the player who jumps around. And I think he's going to want to be at a Premier League club for a few years.
Yeah. Yeah. My answer to that as well was like that. I said it's a very, very reasonable take. It's when the point was made to me, because I was like, yeah, like it is a very good point. Like it could easily happen. But the hope would be that Emery like sees Villa as the Villarreal or Sevilla project he had, only with the money to take it further. So yeah, hopefully he sees it as the long-term project he's always wanted, because he does come across as a project manager. And the other point I made was, it's hard. I can't really worry about that like anymore now, because we had so long of bad years. Just really just have to enjoy the positivity that's going on at this moment. Like, I can't think that far ahead to think, well, what if he walks away, you know? Because the longevity of management is gone. Like, that, it doesn't happen anywhere really now. So, I mean, there is a realistic chance he'll leave in the next 5 years, you know, or whatever.
But if he was there for 5 years, but I'd consider that, from what we've had over the years, I'd consider 5 or 6 years.
Oh, it'd be brilliant. Yeah.
I wouldn't have the fear if it was a 5 or 6 year window, because he would have already set up stuff, not just beyond, you know, well beyond the first 11 as well.
Yeah.
The point you made there, I know, is spot on though. Like, I suppose that's how you get success, isn't it? You put the right people in the right places, you know? Yeah. And then if you have everyone in the club pulling in the same direction on the same ship, you know, you're going to be more successful.
Yeah. And I don't think you get a manager of Emery's quality and caliber without giving him the structure around him that he wants. And, you know, he's not going to walk into a club and be, you know, tied up with someone else's sort of structure. I think he's been around the block, knows where he wants, and has looked at Villa and knows what he, you know, what he needs in place to be successful. The only, like I said, the only thing for me is, you know, you give someone the keys to the kingdom, and then you sort of, I don't know, I guess I'm just, yeah, if he did walk away, then do we rip it up and start again, I guess is my worry. But I do see him being around for a while.
Yeah, that's a great way to end the
brilliant question.
This has been the Aussie Villains podcast. Get us on Twitter at Aussie Villains. Get us at Australian Fans of Villa on Facebook. You can join our group. You can ask questions. We'll answer it. We'll get stuck into you throughout the season when you ask a ridiculous one. So we won't be kind of going forward. Boys, absolute pleasure. And we'll speak to you next week.
Up the Villa.
I'm just giving it a bit of time. There we go. It'll take a fair bit of time to edit tonight.
Thanks for joining us for another episode of the Aussie Villains podcast through the Love Sport Podcast Network. So if you look up the Love Sport Podcast through Apple, through Google, through Spotify, any way that you're listening to your podcast, if you could give us a review there, it'll get our reach out a little bit, and we really do appreciate it. thanks once again for all your questions that you posed, and we can't always answer because, you know, we know as much as you do, if not less. This is, was, and always will be the Aussie Villains Podcast.